Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. So if you're a renter and you think, well, at least I'm not subject to the property tax, a quirk in the way that New York City treats rental buildings and co-ops and condos might mean that renters are getting squeezed because of property taxes. You might have heard WNYC reporter Jessica Gould's piece this morning on a lawsuit about this issue, and Jessica joins me now in the studio to talk about it and take some of your calls. Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
I said quirk in the law. That might be too kind to describe the property tax knots in New York City. But essentially, owners of rental buildings pay higher taxes than the owners of co-ops, condos, and single-family homes. How does that work?
So I think that the word that you might want to use that's used a lot is inequities. And the system is riddled with inequities. As the way it's written, Class 1, which is single, two, and three-family homes, get the best deal. So Brownstone Brooklyn or a Tudor in Forest Hills, Queens. And then Class 2, which is apartment buildings, pay a higher effective tax rate than Class 1. And then within that, there's a series of inequities, which the way that the condos and co-ops are assessed, they pay less than the larger rental buildings.
And what are these property tax rates? Well, here are some of the numbers as the Wall Street Journal wrote them up. Tell us if this is consistent roughly with what you know. The large rental buildings have an effective property tax rate of 4.5% approximately of assessed valuation. Co-ops, little less, 4.1. Condos, significantly less, 3.5%. And single-family homes, 0.78%, about 0.75% of the assessed value of the homes.
Well, put another way, Class 1, which has a 46% share of market value, the share of the tax levy is just 15%, whereas Class 2, which is those apartment buildings, their share of market value is 23.5%, and their share of the tax levy is 36.5%.
And you use in your story as an example the Dakota, the iconic building, luxury building on the Upper West Side, 72nd Street and Central Park West, where famously John Lennon used to live, and he was shot outside, and of course so many other people. Why is the Dakota a good example?
So, well, first of all, it's a good example because a lot of us know it. It was one of the first New York City buildings that I came to recognize as a Beatles fan. But I think that what's important to know here is that because of the way that the assessments work, condos and co-ops are assessed – so, I'm sorry, rental buildings are assessed according to how much income they generate, which is different from the way, like, single-family homes are assessed because it's by how much their market value is. But condos and co-ops don't generate income in the same way. And so they are compared to buildings that do. So for the Dakota, they use a building nearby on West 70th Street and say, well, this is sort of like the Dakota, and we're going to use the rental income to determine how much the value is. But a building on West 70th Street, though very nice, you know, doesn't have the John and Yoko history. It doesn't have the park view. It doesn't have the architectural history. So it's not quite a fair comparison.
So listeners, call and weigh in if you are affected or realize that you are affected by these property tax inequities. 212-433-WNYC. Landlords, this is your moment. 212-433-9692. Tell us how you see the property tax issue that we're discussing here. And there's a lawsuit, which is why this is in the news right now. How big a part of your operating costs are the property taxes that you're paying? How does that affect how much rent you charge your tenants? Do you ever consider converting your rental building into a condo for this reason in part? And anyone else who wants to weigh in, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. So are these inequities designed to encourage ownership? Is that why the single-family home rates, which are presumably owned overwhelmingly by the people who actually live there, so low. You know, one thing that a lot of listeners probably don't realize is that the difference is so huge between New York City and the suburbs. Biggest issue in the suburbs, in Westchester and Rockland and Suffolk and Nassau, et cetera, so often is property taxes going through the roof. Same thing in New Jersey. And yet in New York City, it's less than 1%.
Well, my understanding is that the quest for homeownership and sort of the idealized view of homeownership helped shape this property tax system. There weren't many experts who could talk about what the system, what the genesis of the system was prior to it being codified into law in 1981. But basically, there were a bunch of challenges to it, and they ended up suing and keeping it basically the same way. And, you know, homeownership is a value that federal policies promote. It's a value that local policies promote, and this is one of the ways. It's also expected that homeowners, because they get the property tax bill in the mail, are a more motivated political constituency.
Right, and that's so often how things come out in public policy. Who's the organized political constituency or the donors with deep pockets, and those are the people who wind up getting policy to go their way. But in a way that's counterintuitive, because who is supposed to have more political clout in New York than the real estate lobby, which is often the same as the landlord's lobby?
Right. I mean, I reached out to the Real Estate Board of New York to get their comment on the suit and on the issue. And what they said to me was they are glad to hear that the de Blasio administration is interested in looking at this issue, reviewing it, which is something that Mayor de Blasio has said and his deputies have said on this case. And they didn't say anything beyond that.
Does de Blasio want to or want to consider lowering taxes on rental buildings, raising taxes on single-family homes, or both?
So he hasn't said what he plans to do. He says he's looking at it. But it's dicey for that reason. I mean, if you decrease the tax rate on rental buildings, it's unless you increase the tax rate on someone like homeowners, you're going to end up with a budget hole. And we already have budget holes moving forward by billions of dollars through 2018.
Would this be part of the de Blasio administration's affordable housing agenda, that you make rentals more affordable by lowering the tax on landlords?
Well, certainly affordable housing advocates are saying this is an important issue to look at. And they say that it disincentivizes the creation of affordable housing and the maintenance, as you said, by having this higher tax burden on rental buildings.
Then, of course, there's the question of whether landlords would actually pass the savings on to the tenants and lower rents, or whether they would just take more profits. But David in Forest Hills is calling in, lawyer who represents landlords. David, is that correct?
Yes. I'd like to make a comment that you know, the plaintiffs don't have any standing in the case because they don't pay, you know, taxes, and it's assumed or estimated that they are paying taxes, you know, by the landlord passing on the expenses like the insurance and other, you know, maintenance.
So let me get a response. Jessica, who are the plaintiffs in this case?
So Rosa Rodriguez is a single mom in Queens, and Ernest Robinson, who lives in the Bronx. She is Hispanic. He's Black. They are suing the city, saying that this system is discriminatory against Blacks and Hispanics because of the overrepresentation, proportionally speaking, of Blacks and Hispanics in rental buildings compared to homeowners. But I think that's a really interesting point. It's important to note that renters don't technically pay property taxes. Although I interviewed my own landlord when I was doing this story, and I asked him about his property taxes. He said they were too high. He said they keep getting higher. And I said, well, what do you do? And he said, oh, well, I pass them on to you.
So here's a clip of the attorney who spoke to you, Randolph McLaughlin, about the discrimination issue. Is that what we're going to hear?
Yes.
11 seconds of attorney Randolph McLaughlin.
When you look at the demographics of co-ops and condos, those owners are predominantly white, and renters in buildings 11 or more units are predominantly Black and Hispanic.
So that makes it a civil rights issue, but the caller asserted that the plaintiffs don't have standing.
Right. I mean, that's the question. Do you assume that property taxes are passed down, and there's no real data on to what extent that happens and how often. Anecdotally, I think a lot of us who have spoken to our landlords about it will find that it's true, there's no hard numbers on it.
Let's take another caller, Leslie in Manhattan, who lives in a co-op. Hi, Leslie, you're on WNYC.
Hi, I wanted to make the point that it isn't necessarily rental buildings that get socked by the assessments, because we live in a small 24-unit co-op near some luxury high-rise rentals that have gone up. We have no services in our building, but we are being assessed on the same basis as people that have roof decks and gyms and a doorman. And our building assessment is going up 11 to 15% a year, and it has been for the last 5 years. Our building pays over $500,000 a year in real estate taxes, and most of the people in our building are retired teachers, photographers, writers, college professors. So in terms of affordable housing, it also works the other way.
What do you want, Leslie? What do you think would be fair, since people should pay taxes, right, including property taxes, I imagine you believe?
Yes. I think that the way that buildings are assessed has to change in terms of amenities, in terms of the actual, if my unit if an appraiser comes in and appraises my unit, he appraises based on the amenities of the building, the condition of the unit, all of those things go into the value of my unit. But the way the whole building is being appraised is comparing us to a building that has luxury units that are on the 48th floor with a spa and a gym and a doorman. And basically, we take out our own garbage, and we have none of that, mm-hmm. but we are being assessed as if we do. And that's the problem for me.
Interesting, Leslie.
Yeah, I mean, the assessment process is a whole other wrinkle to this whole question. And the Department of Finance, I asked them about this, and they said that they couldn't really speak to the way the law was written. They understand that the de Blasio administration is looking into changing it, but, you know, they do the best they can to assess according to the way the law is written.
And we have a caller who says that the numbers that I read from the Wall Street Journal transcription of a Wall Street Journal article that I was given, it is way off with respect to single-family homes. So I don't want to give out any misinformation. So, Jessica, see if you can clarify this. Is the property tax rate on single-family homes really less than 1%, as I said, or is it really much higher than that, as our caller is trying to correct?
I don't have the percentage for single-family homes. But what I do know is that single-family homes do the best. You know, 1, 2, 3-family homes, generally speaking, get the biggest benefits in the city. And then there's further inequities within Class 1, just like there are in Class 2, with caps so that a certain property can't appreciate more than a certain amount in one community. So if you're in a rapidly appreciating community and you have a cap, then you end up doing better than someone who's in a less appreciating community.
And I'm looking at the actual Wall Street Journal article now, and sure enough, at least according to the journal, they do some comparisons of what your home is worth and what you would be paying in property taxes. So, for example, a co-op apartment worth $113,000, you would be paying about $4,600 in property taxes, or about a 4% property tax rate. If you live in a single-family home worth five times that, $531,000, you'd be paying about the same property taxes, $4,170. And so that is equated as a 0.78 single-family home property tax rate, at least according to these examples that are given in the Wall Street Journal. You interviewed, let's see, you spoke to Charles Brescher from the Citizens Budget Commission about the political will to do something about that, about this, and here's 18 seconds of what he said about that.
Property tax bills are much more visible for homeowners. They either get the bill directly or it's reflected in the mortgage payment to the bank. And so there is the visibility does, I think, sort of motivate a constituency and makes it harder for elected officials to raise taxes on homeowners.
And that's a fair point. I'll bet a lot of co-op and condo owners, not to mention tenants, don't really know what the property taxes are.
Right. I mean, I certainly didn't know anything as a renter myself, and I'm in the process of buying a place. I was asked what the property tax was, and I wasn't sure because it's in the maintenance fees.
Ben in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Brian. So I just had 2 points. So I live in a co-op, but I've rented in the past. But basically, I think what needs to be mentioned is that so residential owners pay a tax on every transaction when an apartment is bought and sold, whereas renters don't pay any tax every time they move into or leave an apartment. So I think that probably offsets a lot of the difference in a lot of ways. And then just the other thing is I think that condos are really the problem here because with the tax abatements on them, they're basically paying almost nothing in taxes. And so that inflates the prices of apartments in those neighborhoods, makes it overall much less affordable, and co-ops and other taxpayers have to shoulder the burden.
Interesting. Ben, thank you very much. What about the difference between co-op property taxes and condo property taxes? Why would they be different?
I didn't look into that specifically, but a colleague came up to me this morning and said, my husband really wants you to talk about the ways that co-ops pay so much more than single-family homes. And I don't know how it compares exactly to condos, but
condos, again, according to the Journal article, the condos have the lowest rate other than single-family homes. You know, in the category of multifamily buildings, condos pay a 3.5% property taxes compared to over 4% for condos. 4.5% for large rental buildings.
Right. I mean, what you see here is that it's so complex. There are all these different rates. So it's unusual for people to even know about these disparities.
Donna in Astoria. You're on WNYC. Hi, Donna.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
My question is, I've always assumed that property taxes pay for city services. So the question is, why wouldn't big apartment buildings pay more than, say, single family or even commercial buildings, which have very few residents and actually use less city services than some of the buildings, you know, particularly in Manhattan condos and high rises?
Yeah, it's a great question.
So commercial buildings pay the most, proportionally speaking. But I think it's important to note that we're talking about proportions here. But I think that's part of the philosophy that's embedded in the property tax code is that commercial buildings and rental buildings, which are seen as income generating, should pay more of a burden, should carry more of the burden than single family homes.
And I think Donna raises the larger question of what are property taxes for?
Right.
And in New York City, again, this is something that people who live in the city and own probably realize. A lot of other people may not. The property tax debate all over the rest of New York State and New Jersey and so much of the country is that property taxes are going up to pay for education because the cost of education in the public schools is going up. And property taxes in, you know, well-to-do suburbs are through the roof because people there demand a lot of services in their public schools for their kids and small class sizes and everything else. So property taxes are education taxes in much of the country, not in New York City. The vast New York City public school system is paid for from the general fund, so property taxes contribute to that, but there's no direct link between property taxes and education. That makes the city different from almost everywhere in America, right?
Well, some budget experts break it down and say that, first of all, it's important to know that property taxes are the single biggest revenue source for the city. So they touch everything in terms of services. And a big portion of that does go to schools, ultimately. It's just put into the whole pie right. And then carved out.
And another thing that I wonder with respect to Mayor de Blasio, and I almost asked him this in one of the televised debates that I was a questioner in the fall, but I didn't have time. He wants to raise the income tax on the city's wealthiest individuals or highest earning individuals as a way to fund pre-K and other services, given the inequities today. Why doesn't he look at raising the property tax on the most expensive luxury homeowners. I mean, so it wouldn't touch the average family who owns a single family home that happens to have valued over the years to try to exempt them, but to really go after this top 1%, the same population who tends to own very, very high-end real estate in the city and raise the property taxes on them. Why isn't that part of the conversation, since he wouldn't need Albany's permission for that?
Well, I believe he does need Albany's permission to change anything significant
really?
In the property tax.
I thought the property tax the city council could do, but
no,
maybe I'm wrong.
He has to go to Albany for permission on this. So that's one thing. And some people are suggesting exactly what you just posed, that this is a source of revenue that's untapped in the city. The question is, I think, what are the political consequences of tapping it?
One more call. Shari in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi there. I'm answering one of your earlier queries to each other regarding the difference between condo and co-op. I'm a real estate paralegal.
Thank you.
So the difference is that co-ops are not considered to be real property, but condos are. So individual condo owners also pay real estate tax the way homeowners would.
Because they actually own their...
They own real property.
The apartment, rather than own shares in the co-op,
correct,
which owns the apartment as a group.
Right. So the building will pay taxes, and the people who own the building lease pay taxes, but the condo owners then pay real estate tax on top of
right.
that.
Right. And I should know this since I live in a co-op. But if you add the co-op, the taxes that the individuals pay and the taxes that the co-op itself pays, does it?
Well, no, the condo. Condo owners pay real estate tax.
As individuals. And then the condo itself, that's what I meant to say, the condo also. So is it a misleading stat that I have here from the Wall Street Journal that the condos pay a lower effective rate? When you add up the condo community and the individuals' tax rates, do they start to even out?
The leaseholder pays a certain amount of tax. But then the individuals pay tax, too, and the individual tax is based on the individual assessment of their unit.
Right. All right. Thank you very much for clarifying
you're
that.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
And as soon as we can get Sherry's line off here, we're going to wrap it up, I guess. What's at stake? The hook to this. So we've been spending the last 20 minutes talking about the whole New York State property tax, New York City property tax system with WNYC's Jessica Gould, who's been reporting on it. The hook is a lawsuit. Is the judge going to rule?
Well, the city is supposed to respond to the suit in July. So that's the first part. And we're waiting to hear what that is. They've been getting extensions. It's interesting because de Blasio has said that he wants to look at this. This council has called for a commission to look at the property tax system. There seems to be a groundswell right now, but it's so complex, I'm told, that it's going to be a very slow groundswell.
And again, the plaintiffs are de Blasio constituents, really. Poor, relatively low income at least, Black and Latino tenants who say the system is racially discriminatory because the large rental buildings where Black and Latino people disproportionately live pay the highest property tax rates.
Right.
So we'll see what the de Blasio administration does to defend or join this suit, and we'll see what the judge does down the road. Jessica Gould, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Still to come, do one-stop job centers actually offer jobs? Stay with us.